This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
On this Friday morning, and it's chilly outside right now. A cold start, I'd say cold, 48 degrees, and it's going up to 75 today, so a beautiful spring day. Yesterday was just gorgeous. Today is going to be beautiful. Get out and enjoy it, because before you know it, it's going to be miserably hot and humid in summertime, so you got to enjoy these days. We don't get that many of them. Tomorrow, though, it's going to be rainy with a high of 74, but that's good because it clears out in time for Sunday and the parades that are scheduled. Barkus and the trucks going down St. Charles Avenue, as I understand it. Highs of 71 then. Looking ahead to next week, and again, daylight saving time starts tomorrow night, Sunday morning. So tomorrow night before you go to bed, you want to set your clock ahead 1 hour, spring forward, which means you lose an hour sleep. I know that might seem like an oversimplification, but it can get confusing. And then for the next week, you'll have some nice weather to enjoy that extra hour of daylight in the afternoon. Highs of 70 on Monday, 73 on Tuesday. Plenty of sunshine extending into about 7 o'clock. 75 on Wednesday, then a chance for showers Thursday. And the weekend's looking pretty good. Warming up as it should for the middle of March. And I'm trying to look when sunset is. Sunrise at 6:17, sunset at 6:03, which means after daylight saving time comes in, you'll have until 7 o'clock for outdoor activities, etc. We're trying to connect with a guest to talk about what's going on with budget reconciliation and DOGE, because Elon Musk and DOGE is getting a lot of the headlines. But what you got to watch out for in these deals is, where's the real money being spent? And are they playing a game of misdirection where it's like, yeah, we're cutting $100 here and $200. It's kind of like in a household, right, where the husband and wife are playing games with each other or whomever it is, the significant others. And they're saying, look, I saved $100 on gas here and I saved $20 here. But meanwhile, they're out getting fitted for custom golf clubs for $2,000, or the other way around, where or either one, or depending. I'm not trying to be sexist about this at all, but the wife's doing something and spending a lot of money on something while making it seem as though she's saving a couple of dollars on this or that, and meanwhile the budget's going down a drain. And that's kind of what's happening in the country. And I think what makes this difficult for a lot of people is, and I've used this phrase before, a lot of this stuff is in the weeds. You've heard that expression, right? Because it's where all the policy is and all the complicated stuff is. And you got to have a legal pad in front of you and write down a flow chart with circles, and this leads to that, to that. Well, wait, but that could mean this. And the public doesn't have, in a lot of situations, the patience or the time, the wherewithal to do that. And unfortunately, that's where the details is. And the analogy I've made is a lot of this stuff is in the weeds. But if you've ever played golf for money, that's where most of the cheating goes on, right? Where the weeds are high and nobody can really see what's going on and who's moving the ball and this and that and the other thing. And I think that's what we have to watch out for as it relates to so-called plans to reduce debt and deficit. Are they really, by making these cuts that get a lot of attention and a lot of publicity, but meanwhile, the network news and the newspapers either don't have the time or the resources, or the public doesn't have the wherewithal to go through all of this and understand exactly what it means? Because it seems as though both parties constantly say they want to cut debt, they want to cut deficit, they do tax cuts to keep one class happy or the other class happy, or maybe both, doing away with taxes on tips, for example, but that's got to be cut somewhere. And as a young person, I know I always thought, well, if you have a surplus, that means you're collecting too much taxes. And in a way, that's true. But in another way, it's not that simple, because you have to look at what services the government provides. You have to realize that there's going to be, in the retail world, they call it shrinkage, where stuff's going to get stolen and there's going to be inefficiency. It's going to happen. And I don't think it's realistic to think that federal employees or state employees or city employees are going to be any more diligent than employees in the private sector, because let's face it, we've all been in places where we've seen this worker or that one leaning on the counter drinking coffee or doing this or chatting up the receptionist when there should be work to do. And it goes back to our first jobs in high school, right? Well, how many times were you told when you had your job in high school, you got time to lean, you got time to clean? So I think to believe that any government employee is going to work nonstop, you know what, against the wall, and just there's going to be no waste, no inefficiency at all, is not realistic. That being said, we do have to decide who can help themselves and who can't help themselves, and give those that can help themselves the opportunity, the economic opportunity, to work and help themselves and provide that. We also have to make sure that as a society, I think we're better and we take care of those who legitimately cannot. That's what government is all about, right? As well as taking care of the basic things. Problem is, when it comes to the legislative process and no line item veto, no term limits, and you'll never see this, that's why the governor here has line item veto, the president doesn't. That's why you see so much pork barrel spending, where they'll attach this onto that bill that has absolutely nothing to do with anything, but they hold it hostage. And that's the vote trading process in Congress as well, as, okay, well, I need this to pass. I'd only really agree with the money you want for your district to spend there, but I'm going to go ahead and trade votes for it. And that's how we wind up in the mess that we're in. 621, quick look at traffic now, WWL. 27, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined now by Rob Fry from the National Weather Service. Look ahead to the weekend, because we had trouble on Mardi Gras, which led to the cancellation of some parades. Also, the rescheduling of some for this weekend. But now we have a little weather threat this weekend. Let's talk about it. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. Tell me what's going to happen this weekend with the weather. First of all, yesterday was splendid. Today is going to be splendid, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a little crisp this morning, a little fresh out there, but I'm going to warm up today, a little bit warmer than yesterday. We're looking at 70s across the board today, so it should be a pretty good day. Now, as you mentioned, all the stuff going on this weekend, all the rescheduled things out there. Well, Saturday's looking a bit rough in terms of all that. Right now, it's not anything comparable to what, you know, we dealt with earlier in the week with all the wind and all the severe weather. But we do have a marginal risk for some severe weather. Main threat would actually be large hail. And outside of that,
see,
and rainy.
Having replaced a roof a couple of years ago with this big hailstorm, it was more about 10 years ago, I guess. Now, I don't want to hear about large hail, Rob. I'm sorry to disappoint you there, but I don't want to hear about that at all. What kind of chances for large hail, and where, and what's the time frame on that?
Well, the best chance for severe weather tomorrow looks to be in the afternoon and early evening time frame. Right now, it's not a very, I mean, it's a marginal risk. It's a category 1 out of 5, if you will. So it's the lowest on the scale there. But again, it's something we can't rule out. There's also a chance for some wind gusts in there too. Maybe even a weak tornado or two possible in there, but that would be more closer to the coast. So I think that would be way down toward the coastal areas there.
So sometimes it seems like the tornado threats are north of the lake. This is going to be more south of the lake in this case?
Yeah, in this case. It all depends on where we can get the warm sector, basically where the surface low will track, and then anything south of that will be a little bit warmer. Anything north will be a little bit cooler. And that's the thing. When I say cooler, I also mean aloft, 10 to 25,000 feet. We got a little bit of cold air coming in, and that may actually help with that hail potential, unfortunately.
Uh-oh. Tell me about Sunday. How are we looking there for the rescheduled events?
Well, everything should be moving east. There may be a lingering shower or two early in the morning, but right now it looks like most of Sunday should be rain-free for us. It looks like maybe some decreasing clouds later in the day as well. A little bit cooler, just a skosh cooler, but not anything that we're going to really recognize. I mean, we're looking at, instead of mid-70s, we're talking upper 60s, lower 70s.
And partly cloudy in the afternoon?
Yeah, definitely decreasing clouds later in the day.
All right, so daylight saving time coming in, less sunlight. I guess that has a big change on the climate, right? Just kidding. Thank you, Rob. Have a good day.
Oh, you got jokes. All right.
Yeah,
likewise.
I do. That's what I pay me. Thank you. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Rob Fry, thank you. National Weather Service, appreciate it. So, chance for hail, man. That hail, once you replace a roof with that deductible, hail will scare the hail out of you. Right now, time for WWO First News. 6:45, quarter till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL. So, you got a beautiful day today. Then you got a chance for showers tomorrow afternoon, early evening. Maybe large hail is what the meteorologist from the National Weather Service told us, which if you've ever had to replace a roof because of large hail and pay that big deductible, you don't want any part of that, believe me. So let's hope that doesn't happen. And then by Sunday, it all clears out. As a matter of fact, text me on the Oakland Jeweler Talking text line at 504-260-1870. And let me know if you're going to the truck parades, because I think the first one starts at 11, then 11:30 on a traditional route on Sunday. And I'd like to see what the turnout is for those. So let me know. One thing that always amazes me about these truck parades is sometimes I'll have a hard time going to sleep at night with perfect conditions and the weather and the sheets clean and everything else. But yet, I've also been on a neutral ground on St. Charles Avenue, 11:30, sun shining in my face. Those 18-wheelers going by, and I'm sound asleep. Jeff Palermo joins us now, who is the WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm all right. Let's talk about them Tigers and the LSU baseball team.
Well, one final tune-up, if you would, before you begin SEC play next weekend against Missouri. They'll be welcoming North Alabama to the box. North Alabama, not a great team, just 3 wins so far on the season. But, again, it's a tune-up, and the way the schedule works out, it kind of acts like a weekend SEC series, meaning you're playing tonight, you're playing tomorrow night, then you got the day game on Sunday. So you can get the body right, get into that rhythm of playing on Friday and Saturday nights, and then coming back on Sunday for that final game. No changes to the LSU weekend rotation. It's still going to be Cade Anderson tonight, Anthony Ianson on Saturday, and then Chase Shores on Sunday. So, and then another weekend here to give some of these other guys in the bullpen an opportunity to get out there, try to continue to figure out what roles everybody's going to be fitting into. It looks like, you know, Cason Evans has certainly done a nice job as the closer, with Gavin Guidry still sidelined with his back injury, and Guidry will not pitch again this weekend. They do have another midweek game Tuesday before you get into SEC play, and I think Jay Johnson is targeting that Tuesday for Gavin Guidry to finally make his season debut.
Tell me about the way the team's shaken out as opposed to what we thought it was going to be and how it's looking, both pitching, hitting, bullpen, et cetera.
Well, I think it's been a really good start. You only have the one blemish, the one loss to Omaha. I think the offense has really come around nicely. You've seen guys like, I think some of the big question marks going into the year was, okay, Daniel Dickinson had a really good year at Utah Valley. Is that going to translate here? And so far it has. Now, granted, he hasn't faced SEC pitching, but he really performed very well last week in Texas, where you're going up against some really good teams there in Nebraska and Kansas State and Dallas Baptist. And Derek Curio, how is the freshman going to make the transition from high school to college baseball? And the guy just looks like a natural out there, not only in left field, but in the leadoff position. Chris Stanfield has done a really nice job in center field, and I think they found a spot with him in the lineup, batting ninth. Right field was such a competitive position because he had multiple guys that could play there, from Jake Brown to Josh Pearson to Ashton Larson to Ethan Frye, and I think they found a bit of a rotation there. Ethan Frye is kind of the odd man out at this point, and Luis Hernandez has established himself, I believe, as your starting catcher. They still need to improve there defensively. Hernandez is still trying to make progress there, but he seems to be the guy at this point. And then, as I mentioned, the starting pitching has been really good. It hasn't been great. There's been each guy has had its issues here or there, but it's certainly done its job. It's they're going out there. They're giving you 5-6 innings, keeping the team in the game. And then some of these guys out of the bullpen have kind of figured out their roles. I mentioned Case and Evans, but you got Zach Cowan and Connor Bench. Those two guys have been really good. So William Schmidt and Connor Ware have looked good at times as your weekend starters, or weekday starters, I should say. So a lot of guys have emerged. There's a lot here with Jay Johnson to work with. The depth is still, I think, what kind of sets this team apart from other teams in the country, and why they're ranked number one and two in the respective polls.
Who's strongest in the SEC, stronger in the SEC? I'm looking ahead at the LSU schedule here.
In the first half of the SEC schedule for LSU is not that bad. It's very, very manageable. You remember last year they went through a rough spot playing some of the better teams in conference play, got off to the 3-12 start. This time around, LSU opens up against Missouri, and Missouri is – you know, one of the lightweights in the Southeastern Conference when it comes to baseball. And now it's the second half of the season this year where LSU faces its tougher competition, when they got to play Tennessee, when they got to play Arkansas. Tennessee and Arkansas are ranked in the top five with LSU. So those are the two tough teams. Texas A&M, who was the preseason number one, LSU will face later on in the season. Now, the Aggies have struggled. They recently lost 4 in a row, and they're still trying to figure some things out. But you know, by the time you play them in, I think it's like late April, early May, Texas A&M may be a much better team then than they are now.
Yeah, I was resing Her Majesty, well, Rex's Queen, whatever the title is, because she's an Arkansas student, about LSU beating them and beating Arkansas in football, and she came back with the baseball thing. So 650, and then she did the cheer, too, to her credit. She did the ooh, however you do
boy.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. See, but it was royalty, Jeff. It was Mardi Gras. It's royalty.
You couldn't talk back, could you?
No, not on that day, no, but today certainly I could. 652, 8 till 7, traffic now. More when we come back on WWL. 6:55, 5 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. If you go to WWL.com, you'll find a lot of valuable LSU stuff that he writes and posts on there, one of which is about LSU and their new defensive line coach. Talk about that, Jeff, if you would, please.
Big surprise. Kind of came out of nowhere when the news started to leak on Thursday. I mean, LSU had certainly done an extensive search looking for a defensive line coach ever since Bo Davis left last week to join Kellen Moore's staff with the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, they talked to Florida's defensive line coach. They talked with Ole Miss's defensive line coach. The buyout was a little bit too high, you know, especially for a position coach. So LSU, it seemed like Al Davis was the guy, the Missouri defensive line coach. It seemed like he was the going to be the one to replace Bo Davis. And then all of a sudden here, it looks like it's going to be Kyle Williams and LSU starting spring football on Saturday. And Kyle Williams is expected to be there working with the defensive line coach. Now, Kyle Williams was a terrific player at LSU, an All-American in 2005, was on the 03 National Championship team, played 13 seasons for the Buffalo Bills when Buffalo was a bad football team, and he was the best player on the team and went to 6 Pro Bowls and was a fan favorite. And he retired after the 2018 season, took 2019 off, then became the defensive coordinator at Ruston High School in 2020. In the last 3 years, Ruston has played in the state championship game, winning in it in 2023, and he was a big part of it. And he stepped away in January, and the belief was he wanted to spend some more time with his family. He's got 5 kids, all age ranges from 8 to 17, 18 years old, and the girls are in soccer and all that. And but apparently when LSU came calling, he couldn't turn it down. So it's a great hire, I think, considering where we're at in the juncture of the calendar. Yeah, okay, Kyle Williams doesn't have recruiting experience, but today, Tommy, in recruiting, it's all about money.
I was getting ready to say that, Jeff. It's all about money. I swear to goodness. I was going to ask you, my next question was, when it comes to assistant coaches, it used to be about a combination of being able to coach and being able to recruit. But now, really, the recruiting part of it, it's all about the money, is it not?
Yeah, it's all about the money. And so, and he had offers to coach in the NFL. So NFL teams looked at him as someone that can do it. And so I think what Brian Kelly, and we won't hear from Brian Kelly until Tuesday. That's when he will finally meet with the media, even though spring football opens on Saturday. I think what they probably told him is, look, we just need you to develop these guys on the defensive line. Ahmad Bro is a guy that was at Ruston High School when they won a state championship in 2023. So Kyle Williams is very familiar with him. You got Dominic McKinley, a former 5-star prospect out of Acadiana. And I think what makes Kyle Williams such an interesting guy to be a coach, this guy's been in the NFL for 13 years. And what do coach or what do players, when they come to LSU, what do they want to do when they leave LSU? Well, they want to go to the NFL and have a 10-year career there. And Kyle Williams can show him the way. And it's not like Kyle Williams was this massive guy as a defensive tackle. He was an undersized player.
6'1", right?
298. Yeah. I mean, and he wasn't drafted until the 5th round. So this is a guy that kind of knows because of he knows technique. And he obviously can coach it on the high school level. Yeah, it's going to be a little bit different on the college level. But the guy's passionate about football. He's knowledgeable about football. He loves LSU. And so, again, I think at this point, this is a hire that I think everybody thinks it's a good one.
Jeff, we only have 30 seconds left. I got to ask you, when it comes to recruiting, who now is doing, if you want to call it recruiting or the scouting? I don't know.
Well, the assistant coaches are still, you know, a big part of recruiting and still trying to develop relationships. But you know, again, it all kind of comes down to money, but still assistant. And Kyle, I'm sure, will still be a part of that, and he'll learn and grow into that. But it's not so much of a necessity as it was before.
All right, Jeff. Thank you. I appreciate it, man. Good job as always. Excellent articles posted at WWL.com. Good job calling a game the other day, too. I wanted to tell you that.
Thank you, Tommy.
You bet. WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. We'll come back, talk about insurance reform and more on WWL. A beautiful day today, and then some rain tomorrow afternoon into the early evening. Maybe a chance, 1 out of 5. And the man from the National Weather Service, Tim, tell me my area's name again. You remember? Anyway, he was a nice man. Robert Bryson, I think. Anyway, a chance, 1 out of 5 chance for large hail. And for those of us that have replaced roofs due to large hailstorms, so we don't want any part of that, but it's only 1 in 5. That's going to be in the early evening. Then it clears out perfectly for Sunday, and on Sunday, the parades start at 9:30, I think it is. So I was wondering if you're going out to see the truck parades or not. Text me at 504-260-1870, because I'm curious as to what kind of turnout they get for just the trucks. People normally stay. I'm not trying to demean the trucks or put them down at all. Believe me, a lot of people work hard and enjoy it and spend a lot of money and all that. But I'm just wondering about how many people will they stay, right, to see the trucks because they come after the parades, but how many people are going to go out just to see them? It'll be interesting to see the turnout or not. Leah Long joins us now, director of Louisiana chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. How you doing, Leah?
Hey, I'm good. How are you? Also talking about parades, the dog parade in Covington is happening on Sunday, so lots of options for parades. Dog parade. It's called Marty Paws. Sunday in Covington. Yeah, so it's a parade of dogs. So if you're not going to the truck parade, you can go to the dog parade.
Will you be participating in that with your puppy?
I will not, but I usually do go and watch. My dogs are too bad to really be walking in a straight line down a parade route.
Are they spurled?
Yes, they're very wild.
What kind of dogs are they?
I have two golden doodles.
Oh, come on. A golden doodle can't be wild, Leah, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, you know. Have you ever been around a golden doodle? I think they're the most craziest dogs ever.
Actually, I interacted with one as I was walking Teddy TT. That's his name because he's a pitler. Are the golden doodles pitlers or not when they get excited when they see
you? Oh, into everything. Oh, yeah, into everything.
But, you know, I'm saying when they get excited when they see you, they kind of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Got to hate Anyway, I was walking Teddy the Pitler, and a golden doodle came up and surprised him. So anyway, enough of the dogs. Let's move on with insurance because it is a dogged problem, if you will, and so many people get so concerned with this or that or the other thing that has nothing to do with them. Meanwhile, insurance rates affect their everyday lives, and I don't know how much attention is being paid to this or not. What do you want to see happen with the regular session when it happens?
Yeah, so our kind of top priority is going to be insurance. You know, there's a lot of conversation over what we did this past session. And, you know, I think a lot of legislators said there's no silver bullet when it comes to insurance reform. And that's correct. You know, you can't just fix it overnight. And so I think for 2025 session, we're looking for more things done. You know, there was a few things that got vetoed this last time that didn't get passed. So I'm hopeful to see those will come back. But you got to think about, it's an excessive lawsuit abuse area here for us, you know, and excessive litigation costs rise the cost of insurance. So, you know, it goes hand in hand when you're doing lawsuit abuse and insurance reform because, you know, that drives up the cost. And so we're interested to see kind of what bills are being filed, which we're in the pre-filed session right now. And so there have been a few, but, you know, looking to work with the legislators and the governor and insurance commissioner Tim Tipple to try to chip away at our insurance problem here and make it, you know, more affordable here for everyone.
When you're talking with small businesses, you're talking about automobile insurance primarily, or are you also talking about homeowners or business insurance in general?
Yeah, business, home insurance, you know, auto, property insurance, all of that, it kind of drives up. And you kind of think about small businesses, you know, if the insurance premiums go up, it adds to the cost of doing business. And for small business owners, sometimes those higher costs are hard to incur. And it's, you know, do you either pass it on the consumer or do you just eat it? Does it eat at your bottom line? So that's one thing. They're already kind of struggling right now because insurance and, you know, making sure they have enough money to continue to grow their business and hire and also support their local communities. So that's one thing that insurance is probably one of the most direct things affecting them right now.
You know, it seems like such an obvious thing, Leah, where there's a will, there's a way, but is there the will?
I think there is the will. You know, it's getting more popular, which, of course, we had tax session, and, you know, you get through the holidays and Mardi Gras, and you just go talk to everybody. I mean, you can walk through a store, and you can hear someone say, well, my insurance premium just renewed, and it went up. And so I think as we kind of move forward towards session, the conversation is getting picked back up again about, okay, what do we do? And I know there were several interim hearings this summer talking about auto insurance and, you know, the legislators brought in different people to speak. And so I think it's on their mind, too. It's just how do we go about it and what is the right way?
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We go back. We're talking about insurance reform with Leah Long in the upcoming session and how it relates to small businesses. I'd like to ask you on the Oakwood Jeweler Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870. You as a listener, have you contacted your legislator about any of this at all? And do you actually think that these rates are going to go down? Because Leah, I'm trying, but I don't see it happening. I really don't. I see all the money that trial attorneys spend advertising on TV and here on WWL. And I just, man, you watch TV in the afternoon, it's crazy. And I think that's a lot of influence, and I hope I'm wrong. And look, lawyers get justice for people, to be fair. The insurance companies kind of bring it on themselves. But there's a lot of abuse that goes on, and it's worse in Louisiana anywhere. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. 720 Traffic Now.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
WWL. 725, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Talking to Leah Long, our friend, director of the Louisiana chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. And a quick word again, because I got a text, believe it or not, Leah, a couple of texts about the dog parade you mentioned in Covington. Tell me what's going on with it.
Yes, the dog parade is Sunday in Covington, and so they just walk the dogs down the it's down the block in Covington, and I think it starts around noon, maybe. But it's a fun day. It's great for families. So if y'all are in the North Shore area, definitely go check that out.
All right, so let's talk about insurance, specifically, I guess, as it relates to automobile rates. I'm trying, Leah. I hope for reform. I hope for things to get better. But when you look at what happens in Texas, when you look at what happens in Mississippi, it's crazy to think that the insurance rates are so much lower there than here, right?
It is crazy to think about. I mean, insurance is a national issue, and I think everyone's feeling that. But I just think it's the mindset of our state. It's a very lawsuit abuse happy. Just like you said earlier, you know, you drive down the interstate every 2 miles, there's a billboard. You know, if you've been in a wreck, call us. And so actually in the break, I went to the Louisiana Department of Insurance Facebook page. And so there's a statement. It says, Commissioner Tim Temple says, we must get back to where insurance makes you whole after an incident, not making you better than you were. And I think that speaks volumes because, you know, when you get in a car accident, sometimes you look at it as a profitable event. And that's awful to look at it that way. And I think that adds to our issue. You know, it adds to, you know, the premiums being so high because some people make out better than they were. And, you know, that's one thing that we've got to cap on non-economic damages. We've got to cap on, you know, who can recover and what that money's used for. And so I think that's something these legislators have to think about.
So how do you see this playing out? What are you hearing from legislators? What would it look like? What would legislative reform look like that would result in lower automobile insurance rates, or at least them not raising it? I mean, do you actually see the rates come down, Leah?
I mean, I think it's going to take a while for the rates to come down. You know, one, we've got to add competition back to the state, and that's something we've had to do this last session. You know, a lot of riders don't want to ride in the state of Louisiana, and so we've got to get more people here able to ride insurance. And I think there's just several things we've got to come from that way. You know, we've got to somehow make it better for the lawsuit environment here because, you know, you're going to want to come here and write. And so I think the legislators have some good ideas. I know they're going to work with Commissioner Temple, and I know he's going to bring a package this year to hopefully, you know, he's the expert at this. This is what he does. So, you know, I always say we've kind of got to trust him because he's used to the insurance environment, and they bring in all these specialists, and, you know, they're like, well, this can help. And, you know, not one thing is going to fix the overall problem, but I think coming at it from multiple ways is what's going to be beneficial for us and what we could see, hopefully, a change in insurance rates. You know, if we do multiple things, not just one big bill, not just one thing directly targeted, it's going to have to be several things.
Over what kind of time period?
I mean,
I'm not trying to be cynical, Leah.
Yeah,
trying to be cynical. But look, you watch, and I wait for the news in the afternoon, and every commercial is one lawyer after the other, after the other, after the other, and they make it seem, as you said, like a game show. If somebody taps your bumper, that doesn't mean it's like the old Sanford and Son episode about I'm sitting on a gold mine with whiplash. It's that bad in Louisiana. It really is. But, you know, they exert a lot of influence on legislators, and I don't see anything changing. Give me some reason for optimism in a minute that we have left.
I think if you're listening to this, you need to contact your legislator. I think, you know, the people the legislators are going to listen to their constituents. They're going to listen to the ones that vote. And I think that's something we've got to get everyone involved. You know, we had a lot of people involved this last time, the last session, but we need people to contact their legislators, tell them what their premiums are, that they can't afford them, how it's affecting their business. And they're going to eventually listen and realize that this issue is bigger than, you know, the trial attorneys. It's bigger than everything. It's directly affecting the economy here. It's affecting people's lives. So I think that is how we do it. You know, in the time frame, who knows? A year, 2 years, who knows? There's not a time frame, but you got to start somewhere.
And if nothing changes?
Yeah, if nothing changes, then I think we'll just continue to be in this boat, and it's going to drive people out of business, and they're not going to be also be able to afford to live here anymore. You think about flood insurance, you think about home insurance. It's going to take a toll on these people's lives if we don't do anything.
What are the Golden Doodles' names?
Nola and Parrish. I'm not from Louisiana, so we've embedded ourselves fully by these dog names now.
Well, I like it. Thank you, Leah. Good luck. God bless y'all, and, yes. And I hope the insurance thing changes, but I doubt it. I'll believe it when I see it, but my name is Thomas. Thank you. When we come back, we'll help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Right now, time for WWL First News. 7:45, quarter till 8, Friday morning. That's when we help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President of CEO, Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. If you can safely access jeffersonfinancial.org online, you'll find right in the middle of the homepage, manage your money and plan for your future with our financial calculators. And if you click on that, you'll see some tabs, like maybe five different categories: mortgage calculators, loan and credit calculators, investment and retirement calculators, savings calculators, and household finance calculators. And as you click on each of those, you'll see a drop-down menu all in all as Mark Rosa joins us now. Mark, good morning. About, what, 90-something calculators, I think?
Good morning, Tommy. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday, there's quite a few,
and that was the idea. You know, we made that available to our members, but it's actually available to anybody that wants to look. It's free and open to the public. And it's, you know, a lot of people have used it, and I get feedback from it. They say, well, it helped me. At least I know what's going on. Whatever we're talking about, I'm speaking generically. But there's a bunch of things for loans and refinances and you know, combinations of loans and different types of loans and so many things that some people just weren't aware of, and they're saying, and it dispers a question. So if we could, you know, point them in a direction that, oh, well, you could do this and this and this, and you might save some money. And with all the talk this morning, I was listening, coming over the causeway, and, you know, with the tariff, all the uncertainty in the market is driving up some prices, and it's more inflation-related price increases. And, you know, for people that were just absolutely in their wits' end a year ago, well, that party isn't over. And prices still seem to be going up. But, you know, so it's like it's money on the table and it's your money. So I always like to say there's nobody more interested in your money but yourself. But if the debt is already incurred, if you go through some of these calculators, want to play with them, that'd be a good word to use. Mm-hmm. You know, you start saving a material amount of money. Tommy, I'm telling you, just anecdotally, I see people paying 11 and 12% on car loans where they need to pay half that. And it's lethargy. And I'm not picking on people as well. I'll get around to it. Well, in the meantime, you know, it's significant money. And when people say, oh, well, I want to, you know, try to save $10 a month or $50 a month or whatever, it's like you probably have $200 a month on the table just to refinance the car that you already have. And you're fine with the vehicle, but it's those types of things. So that's why we keep talking about the calculators, because I think that's nobody. You can't do the things in your head, that's for sure. You need some help with the arithmetic, and those things are made for that purpose. But
let me jump in one real quick if I can, and this is more of a Monday topic, but for people that are freaking out about the market and about tariffs, and I'm not for President Trump. I'm for the president, whoever it is, succeeding, because if he succeeds, the country succeeds. I'm not campaigning for anybody, but to say that this is happening with tariffs or that is happening or the market this, there are fluctuations. It is a market. So I think it is entirely too early to say anything yet about the results of anything. Is it not, just from an analytical standpoint?
Absolutely. Okay. Meantime, we had too many big things on the table at one time. So to have an accurate prediction is virtually impossible. And I think, you know, we're still under Fed watch. I keep calling it that because the Fed is so involved in the markets currently. What they're going to do in the next couple of months is anybody's guess. I don't think they know what they're going to do. They're saying it's data dependent. We got the jobs report coming out this morning. There was comments made the entire week about, well, if that's too big, then, you know, the Fed, they're going to hold back on some. At some point, if things are going in that direction, meaning the economy is growing and things are robust and the unemployment rate keeps going down, that the conversation will turn to they're going to increase rates, not decrease them. And if things go the other way, just want to remind all our listeners, when rates are going down, it means that the economy is weakening. And when rates are going up, the economy is in the process of strengthening. So where are we right now? Well, it depends on what you're talking about. So these tariffs and things, talk about shaking up the market. We were just doing our segment on Monday, and today, Friday, the markets aren't open yet. So basically you had 4 days of activity, and the Dow is down 1,400 points. So out comes an article on MarketWatch this morning, some lady saying, I'm down 20% this week. It's like, wait a minute, for a 3% change in the Dow, you're down 20%. So you need to look at what you're investing in. There was no particulars in that article, but that went to show what we've talked about a lot of times on the Monday segment. It's know what you own, and we all get complacent about certain things. Oh, I've been working at, you know, ABC grocery store for 25 years, and I take advantage of their 401k. Fantastic. Now, what's in it? And that's where the conversation usually falls apart. I say, well, you know, and it, okay, understand. And if you're having trouble with that answer, that would be the time to say, okay, maybe I need to look at that. Because saying again, nobody cares more about your money than you. And if it's in those retirement type plans, that's a very good move for a person to do that, because you get some of the company kicks in money as you're going along. And of course, you get the tax effects. And that's the whole point of them. But at the end, if we're not knowing what's in there, that seems like, you know, that it's kind of a, that's not the way to do that. So we need to understand what our market is exposed to. So again, with the article out this morning, I'm thinking they must be in very volatile type companies. You know, if their financials are fragile, it's going to make that stock very volatile to market moves. So you've got, again, the Dow moving 3% and you're down 20%. And now they're complaining. Well, what do I do now? You could sell last Friday and you'd be fine. Oh, wait, you can't do that. You can't go back and sell. So now you're wishing the stock back up to a level. And you know, we'll go through all of that emotion that surrounds those types.
And again, if you sell now, you're selling low and buying high, which is the Bass Ackwards thing of what you want to do.
Absolutely. And Tom, it goes back to, you know, I've got people that work with me, and okay, so they're in their mid-20s, and we'll have conversations similar to this. And it's like, yours is a whole different kettle of fish. I don't care how old you are, how young you are, you need to know what you're investing in and understand a little bit about that. You don't have to be an expert, but we could know intuitively what things are if you're asking some questions. And anybody that's participating in a 401k plan, the company has to have access to the people that manage that money and the funds that you're putting money in. And it's very, very, one more time, very seldom in my 41 years in banking and working around people in a financial institution that have very little knowledge of those things. So I can only imagine that people working in non-financial firms, they just don't for the majority of it. I would think that. But you have to have access to those people, and you got to be able to speak to them. It's not company people. That went out with Enron, that the company people can't be advising you what to invest in. It's you call the investment managers directly, and they have to be available to you, and they have to answer your questions, and they have to walk you through choices. And it's all available, all free. It's all part of the 401k, and so few people take advantage of that. And I know in some case you'd send – a little departure from what we're doing this morning, but in some case, you've got reps coming to your business, standing in front of people and saying, how can I help? And it's just, we need to avail ourselves of that. Because, Tommy, technically, if you know, over over the decades, and given the market moves over the decades, it's like you could have people say, well, my house is my biggest asset. Maybe not. You could go way further than that in your 401k accumulation. And it's like, well, you know, my house is worth $400,000. Well, you might have twice that in your 401k, and we don't know anything about what's going on there. Well, I was diligent. I've been working for the company. I tried to max everything out. They put some money in. Market's done well over time. And now I've got quite a portfolio with so little knowledge of it. So as we're approaching, then the danger is, like that article I just referenced, the danger is as we're approaching retirement and you're going to depend on that money to take a 20% hit, you know, that would be out of 800, what's that, $160,000, using that example, that person would be down. And you and I were talking about it through the credit crisis, that so many people had nice portfolios to only see them just crushed when they were so close to retirement. It's like, oh, I can't retire now. You imagine having that thought, you know, kind of rattling around in your head. Wait a minute, I can't retire now, and I was expecting to do so in fill in a blank, 3 years, 5 years, and I can't. So rates right now, go ahead.
Well, I kind of derailed the conversation. I didn't mean
That's
to,
right.
But we can pick it up Monday when we come back, because the two are interrelated, really. When you look at the week ahead on Wall Street and managing your money, they're both kind of related. The calculators are there. Look at them over the weekend, on Monday, rather. We'll kind of morph that a little bit into more of refinancing and mortgages and so forth. I just wanted to address the tariffs thing, because people are freaking out, and it's like, you know, and again, for those that say I bash this or bash that, I'm not bashing anything. I'm just saying it's too early to tell on either side what's going to happen or how this is going to play out. But in the meanwhile, you don't want to sell low and buy high. That's not the way it works.
Correct. And just this morning, we were saying that on Monday that the mortgage rates dropped over the past 6 weeks. Well, this week they dropped again because of all the things we're talking about this morning. So we could pick that up on Monday and continue, because the rates on big ticket items, there's savings to be had there, Tom.
Let's do that. You go have a good weekend.
Yes,
we'll talk to you on Monday. Take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street, Marnie, valuable information, as always, from Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. You can go to jeffersonfinancial.org, find those calculators. 756, quickly to traffic on WWL. It is 8:15, and we're talking with Dr. John Beck, veterinarian with Lakeview Veterinary Hospital, about puppies and how do you make sure you get along with other pets. If you got a new dog, how do you train it? Because there is a new puppy in my life, Teddy, after I lost Betsy the Boxer 3 years ago. It took me a long time to get ready for another one, and it turned out to be a rescue. And I told the story just now that, coincidentally, I had decided to get a dog, and with my schedule, it's hard to housebreak. And I was going to ask my grown child to do it, but up there, they had decided to already adopt a dog for me and was doing it, so it just makes it seem like it was meant to be. How you doing, Dr. Beck?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm all right. I got Teddy sticks here, because I got $100 of chewable toys, and all the dog wants to do is pick up sticks. Let's talk about puppies, and before we get to once they're in a house, let's talk about picking the right dog for the right person. Because I mentioned earlier, I saw a Cane Corso in Petco the other day. These dogs can be just when you look at one of these things, it looks like a superhero animation or cartoon, doesn't it? Of a dog, really?
They do. They are very strong dogs.
Like a dog that's been in the gym. This dog's been bench pressing and doing some squats and deadlifts. I don't know how they get their little paws around the bar, but they manage to do it. But seriously, how do you pick the right dog for the right family for the right person?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it has to do with how active your lifestyle is. You know, obviously a Cane Corso is a very strong, big dog, and so, you know, you need to have a strong owner, because they can be a little bit more difficult to train unless you're aware of the breed. So, you know, if you want a dog that can go running with you, that sort of thing, you know, maybe look for a medium to large size dog, maybe not something like a Pomeranian or a bulldog. You know, bulldogs typically, you know, those sort of breeds do better with a a more calmer lifestyle, just because, you know, obviously in Louisiana we have our heat, so we need to be cognizant of their respiratory, you know, tract. Active dog, active lifestyle, you know, typically fits well. How old is Teddy?
Teddy is about 3 months. Well, no, October something was his birthday.
Okay. So, and what kind of dog is he?
I have no earthly idea. He's got some he's got some Labrador in him, I'm guessing. He's more really what's the name of this company? Tractor Supply Trash, because that's where they adopted him from. No, I'm just kidding. He's not. But sometimes rescues sometimes can be genetically the best dogs you can get, right?
Yes, I totally agree. So absolutely. And a lot of them will have some of the best personalities. So it's okay if we don't know what Teddy is. But, you know, if you think he has a little bit of lab in him, I would say he's going to be active. Mm-hmm. So, you know, keeping his little brain thinking is going to be important when as a puppy, you know, getting some of those interactive toys. I love Kongs. Because they're nice and soft, but, you know, you can put treats in there and freeze them, and it kind of gives you a little bit more time if they're frozen, and it feels nice in their gums, too. Yeah. Can be something good.
I'm sorry. I've been wearing him out, and we're getting ready to take a long walk in a minute here that he better get ready for. but when it comes to the preparation of getting a dog, because a lot of people, you know, they'll see them on TV or something, and they'll see the dog show, and they decide they want this or they want that. But I don't think they realize the commitment that they're getting into. So let's talk about, if you could bring a puppy into the house when we come back, what kind of time commitment do you have to plan on spending, or when it comes to rescuing a dog, about age appropriateness? Because you don't want to have a puppy and expect that puppy to lay down and not play, because that's not what puppies do. We'll also talk about integrating the dog with other dogs. One thing, Doc, real quick before we go to the break, when it comes to a big dog like a Cane Corso, because I saw another one of these dogs years ago in one of these pet stores, and the guy that had this dog weighed about 100 pounds and was not in control of the dog at all. And I worried about the people in the store, and I worried about this guy when he got home. Are dogs aware of the physical size of the owner, or the alpha tendencies, or the strength of the owner, anything like that?
I would say no. I think a lot of it has you know, comes down to what sort of training do they do with them. You know, if you have, you do the training, you do the obedience, spend the time with them, you don't need to be a big, big person to be able to handle a big dog. You know, as long as you have good basics down, you know, in those situations with, you know, control, they know their commands, that sort of thing.
We'll talk about that as well when we return. Dr. Jean Beck, our guest veterinarian with Lakeview Veterinary Hospital, talking about getting a new puppy in the house since I have Teddy now with me. 821 traffic, WWL. WWL, talking to Dr. Jean Beck, veterinarian with Lakeview Veterinary Hospital. It's Tommy and Teddy in the morning on WWL. You want to say hi? Say hi. Go ahead. Go ahead. You sniffing a microphone before? Go ahead. There you go. Dr. Beck, let's talk about house training a dog, because that can be very frustrating. Teddy woke me up this morning barking, had to go outside, let him out. And then he saw a possum that was bigger than him, and he went after it. But I said, easy, buddy, easy. Hang on a second. A dog's got to know its limits. Let's talk about crate training and house training and the best way to go about that.
Yeah, so I think it's very important. I mean, I think crate training is great for new puppies. It kind of gives them a little safe place, you know, to be. I do think it's very important to make it a positive experience. So we never want to put them in there when, you know, as punishment. It's always going to be a good reward. Getting them used to it. You can try feeding them in there, giving them lots of treats when they're in there, and just having them in there for short periods in the beginning so they can kind of get acclimated to it. And it's not, they don't, you know, associate it with, oh, every time I go in here, I get left, you know. Mm-hmm. So just try and make it as positive as possible. And then as far as housebreaking goes, that kind of comes down to consistency. So kind of getting them on a good schedule. You know, if you have them out loose with you, I'd say every 30 minutes, you want to be taking them outside, you know, showing them the grass. First thing in the morning, you know, sometimes if they're tiny, you want to carry them outside so they can get there quickly. But it sounds like Teddy's doing pretty well if he's already alerting you that he needs to go out. You know, that's a good thing.
He is. And one thing I found when it comes to house training, it's all about consistency. Even if you have to set a clock to remind yourself to bring the dog out. And also, I think it's important, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, to bring them in as soon as they finish and praise them. And actually now, I can do it with a gesture with Teddy, and Betsy the Boxer was the same way, where they know it's time to go out in the yard, and you can use whatever word you want. I won't use the word here on the radio, but and they know it's time to do their business, and they do. And,
exactly.
And you go TT and point out to go TT, not now, Teddy. I'm talking on the radio, but when you and I'll point out to the yard, and he'll go out and do it, and Betsy did it as well. Are there some breeds that are more amenable to house training than others?
I would say I find that some smaller breeds take a little bit longer just to kind of catch on to that. And, you know, I think it is important that if you want them to potty outside to avoid pee pads, maybe because some of them will get very used to using those pee pads inside. And so, you know, if you have a big dog, obviously you don't want to be cleaning up pee pads forever. So let's just try getting them used to going outdoors as much as possible.
And the other question I have is somebody texted this in, when it comes to time commitment, because they're thinking about getting a dog for the kids and they're wondering about with the wife and them working, or I guess it's significant, or whoever it is working, what kind of time commitment they're looking at with a puppy or adopting an older dog difference?
Yeah, so puppies obviously take a lot more time, a lot more training involved, housebreaking. You know, with young kids, we need to make sure that they're not chewing on kids' toys, that sort of thing that could get them in trouble. So, you know, if you have a very active family, you know, there's plenty of adult rescue dogs out there that are looking for a new home. So that may be a better fit, you know, so maybe a 2 to 3 year old dog versus, you know, a 10 to 12 week old puppy that needs a lot of time commitment.
And it's not really fair to think that the puppy's going to react on your time schedule, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, they need a lot of time, commitment to, you know, learn the basics, learn how to behave and how you want them to act and get adjusted.
Son of a gun was barking all morning long. I didn't know what he wanted. He wanted me to go lie on the bed with him and take a nap. Teddy, somebody around here has got to work, buddy, and that's me. So, Doctor, thank you. Pleasure talking to you as always. I hope we help people understand a little bit about the commitment involved in getting a dog and a puppy. And you're talking about what, 8, 10 years maybe?
At least, yeah. It's a big commitment. I would say average, you know, expect to, you know, some even 10 to 15. So
don't do it lightly.
Exactly. Think about it before you make that jump.
Thank you, Dr. Jean Beck. Dr. Jean Beck, veterinarian with Lakeview Veterinary Hospital. Say bye, Teddy. He's saying bye. We'll be back in a flash traffic now. News on WWL. 8:45, quarter till 9. Always some great insight if you follow Jeff Nowak at Jeff Nowak on Twitter or WWL.com. Download the Odyssey app. You can listen to the Black and Gold podcast with he and Steve Geller. You can listen to him on Sports Talk. And we're getting ready to talk about free agency and more with Jeff Nowak. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm all right. You know what I wanted to ask you? Everybody's got a story, right? And I see some stuff here that spring break is starting. Have you ever gone on like a spring break, like a real college kind of spring break type thing?
You know, I haven't. You know, I had friends who did, and you know, I had friends in high school who would, you know, they would all go on trips for spring break. They would come back all tan, and I'd be like kind of sitting at home. We were a camping family. We would go up to like Maine and hang out in the woods for a while in the summers. But no, I was never a beach goer. I think it's probably more popular in the South because, you know, you're within driving distance. I went to college in Connecticut, so there was, you know, the water's all cold up there. Man. So.
But that had to be nice camping in Maine, huh?
Yeah, in the summer, because it was, you know, it would be like, it would peak at like 82 degrees. So you're like, all right, I got this. But yeah, we had a pop-up camper, and yeah, we would drag that thing up there. It was always a good time.
All right, let's talk about, that's the best time you have, is spending with family. The toys, everything else, parents, I would just tell younger parents, spend time with your kids. That's what they're going to remember. That's what we all remember. Let's talk about free agency.
Go outside, right.
Exactly. You know what I saw, what I found interesting was Tanya Passignon was riding in the crew of Tux, and more people were concerned with giving him a high five or a low five, however it was, because he was on a float, than they were with beads. Tell me what the Saints are doing with free agency, and I guess we can start with restructuring contracts. Is that what they did with Tanya or not?
Well, so he has an expiring deal, and there's a few players on expiring contracts that are kind of interesting to watch. Tano, his is on the lower end, but Juwan Johnson and Chase Young are two guys that, you know, as we talk about the salary cap and they're $46 million or so, there's some varying numbers there, but I'm going with $46 million over that they need to clear. You know, Chase Young, if they come to an extension
Hang on a second, Jeff, for people that don't understand it, it can get very complicated. Yep. When you say they need to clear $46 million, what does that actually mean?
So they're $46 million over the salary cap right now. And the interesting thing is just the players on the roster, you know, they're actually under the salary cap. But the issue is, you know, Marshawn Lattimore is a big dead money hit that's pushing that number up. They're paying Mike Thomas. They're still paying Jameis Winston. Chase Young and Juwan Johnson are also in that number, kind of pushing them up. And so they need to get under the salary cap by March 12th. Which they'll do by they already cut Jamal Williams. That's kind of it's like about $1.6 million that they're saving there. So that knocked that number down a little bit. But the majority is going to be done through restructures. They're going to, you know, prorate signing bonus. They're going to turn base salary into signing bonuses and then push that number out over void years. That's how they've been operating for the past 6 or 7 years primarily. Let me ask an easier question.
Does that mean that they kick the can down the road and this keeps accumulating and hoping that the cap goes up, or by restructuring, turning it into bonus, does it come out of the Saints? Saints got to pay it, but it doesn't count against the cap.
Well, so here's the thing. When I say all that dead money is from previous years where they've done this, right? Okay. So that's where that extra money comes from. And yes, the term people use is kicking the can down the road. I don't know how accurate that is because it's more so just, hey, this is a process you do every year. It's not like you're going to stop it. And, you know,
it's realistically, the way you do business, right?
Right. I mean, it's a complex process they go through every year. And more teams are doing it this way. The Saints aren't the only team. They're just the most extreme version of it. The Eagles do have a similar version of this, and they're going to be dealing with contract issues. The Cowboys restructured Dak Prescott's contract and freed up $37 million. The Browns restructured Deshaun Watson's contract and freed up like $50 million. And so, you know, the consequences, you're tied to these players for longer times. As long as those are players you want to be tied to, it's not a big deal. So, you know, Eric McCoy, for example, he was the first restructure. He was the most obvious. He's a star player. He's going to be on your roster for a while. You can restructure that deal and feel comfortable that he's going to be around, because it only becomes an issue when you cut those players, because all of those future cap hits speed up, right? They come up to that current year and then you end up having to pay that all at once. So if they were to cut, let's say, Derek Carr this year, for example, all of his future cap hits that have been guaranteed would speed up to this season. That's why he's probably going to get restructured. The Saints have already indicated that they intend to stick with him. And if that's the case, you can free up $30 million against the salary cap this year by restructuring that deal. And that gets you pretty close to scratch between Eric McCoy, which is about $8 million, and Derek Carr, which would be about $30 million. And then you only have to have about $8 million more to clear, which you're talking about. Cesar Ruiz is an obvious candidate to be restructured. It's about $6 million. Carl Granderson's an obvious candidate to be restructured. It's about $6 million. So, you know, the Saints have the levers to get there. It's really just a question of how much you want to clear. The other question is anyone willing to take a pay cut, which is always kind of an awkward conversation to approach. Taysom Hill, you know, is a guy that would probably make sense to take a pay cut if he's amenable to it. And then that would allow you to clear cap space without restructuring. But again, it's like, I don't know, if someone approached you and said, hey, you want to take a pay cut, how would you feel about that?
Now, in that case, that's not restructuring. That's money that he would get later. That's a flat out pay cut, right?
Yes. Yes, that is, he is receiving less money than he is contractually obligated, but it's usually combined with if you take a pay cut, we can keep you around. If you do not, then we will have to cut you. So do you want any of this money? You know,
right. Chance with free agency or what have you.
But I mean, Will Lutz a couple years ago took a pay cut and then they still cut him. So it's definitely not a guarantee.
There are no guarantees in life. Jeff, let me take a break. We come back. Okay. So you got to the salary cap. What do you do now to improve the team, or how do you do it? Because what you're doing, you didn't free up any money. You just got back to where you were not over the cap, right?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, the Saints have a lot of players under contract, so they are not going to have to go out and sign 20 players just to get to a 90-man roster. It's really going to be a situation where, hey, where do we need to improve? Where are the holes? You got 9 draft picks to make. You got to sign those players too. So you're going to have to clear.
That's where we'll pick it up when we come back. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. He'll be on Sports Talk this afternoon, 8:52, 8 till 9. Traffic now, WWL. I quickly back to Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter, talking about, all right, you got the cap cleared up, you know, the overage. What do you do now, Jeff, to improve the team? What have you seen with that other NFL teams, free agency, anywhere the Saints would be interested there? Can you afford free agency, or do you do it through the draft with rookie contracts?
Well, I do think the majority has to be done through the draft, right? Like, you need to build better through the draft, and until you do, it doesn't matter who you sign. No team in NFL history has been sustainably good by signing free agents every year. There are areas you can patch through free agency. You need to figure out who's your left guard going to be. I don't know if they're going to find anyone in the draft that they want to play on day one of the season. So that's somewhere I'd look, okay, can I build the offensive lineup through the draft or through free agency maybe? A guy like Amari Cooper might make some sense. He spent half the season with the Bills. Didn't go particularly well. He's a guy that spent several years on the Cowboys with Kellen Moore. So I think that's kind of what you're going to be looking at. Okay, who are guys that we can bring in on both offense and defense that can fit the schemes that Kellen Moore, that Brandon Staley are going to bring in that maybe we don't have right now? If you can't find an edge or a nose tackle in the draft, is there someone in free agency you can bring in? Because there is space you can clear, especially if you're sticking with Derek Carr. And I think that's the key, is you stick with Derek Carr and you can free up a lot of that money, then you can be a little more aggressive in free agency. And that's what Mickey Loomis hinted at the combine, is they're probably going to be a little more aggressive than they were last year, and so whether that's going to be more long-term deals or another kind of run of these one-year deals like we had last year with Willie Gay and Chase Young.
20 seconds left. Give me a couple.
Aren't just going to sit back.
20 seconds left. Give me a couple of free agent names to watch for.
Yeah, like I said, Amari Cooper.
Okay.
There's a few others. I think Juwan Johnson's going to be back, so he's going to be someone they have to sign. But you know, there's going to be some names that emerge, no question.
Jeff will be listening this afternoon at 4 o'clock when you're on Sports Talk. Thanks, as always. We'll take a break. We come back, we talk to Ian McNulty about eating and drinking, then get some picks from JR. He was hot last week. Without doubt, our favorite time of week, 9:09. We get to talk eating and drinking with Ian McNulty. Then we got some weekend winners from JR. JR on a roll with his free picks that he gives on air, and I cashed in. Whoopsie. I cashed in the last 2 weeks on both of them. Last week was the over in the Indiana-UCLA game. So keep listening for that. I'm going to tell you what. Of course, nobody's 100%, but JR's been killing it. Ian McNulty, who was last week deeply immersed in deep graw, I'm guessing. How you doing, Ian McNulty?
I am great, Tommy, and great to be back with you. Yeah, it was quite the carnival time. It was long. It was wonderful while it was, on Tuesday, Mardi Gras prevailed. You know, for it all, that we found a way. So it was great, but great to be on the other side. And I know that I did it up properly, because when Tuesday late afternoon rolled around, I was ready for not just the day, but for carnival to be over.
It was a long season. You know, I mean, I think March 19th is the latest it can be. So it was March 4th. Maybe March. I might have that date wrong. You know what I wanted to ask you about? I lived here all my life, right? And things change. And I saw Friday referred to as Locals Friday in the Quarter. I don't know if that's a relatively new thing or not. I know it had become big, but tell me about the history of that, because you're a bon vivant. You're a man about town.
Well, actually, I dug into it this year. And there's a story on NOLA.com that I did about it last week.
Regrettably,
we couldn't talk about because I was off gallivanting on Friday for that day. But it basically, what I've noticed, it kind of explains this in the story, is a lot of restaurants have embraced this idea of Friday gras. Now, that term itself has stirred up a lot of debate about what it should be called. Is it Locals Friday? Is it just the Friday before Mardi Gras? Mm-hmm. Is it, apologies to my French teacher, Vendredi Gras? Is, you know, in the style of Lundi Gras? is it just Friday? I mean, give me a break. Do we need to name everything? or is it, Hermes Friday, Coup d'etat Friday? Well, the restaurants have decided that there's a lot of people who just want to go out and party and kick off a weekend that basically lasts until Ash Wednesday. And they have embraced this with deals, with special, you know, people buying out entire dining rooms, with special brunches, restaurants that rarely open for lunch, opening for that Friday lunch in particular, and really doing it up. And what you see is really, yeah, locals kind of flooding the quarter, possibly before a lot of tourists arrive for the weekend. And the roots of it, I think, will certainly indisputably go back to the old line crews that have typically, by tradition, nothing's typical, it's always by tradition with the old line crews, taken over certain restaurants, certain old line French Creole restaurants, for their luncheons before the parades or in the week leading up to Mardi Gras. So Antoine's is basically the peak of this. Antoine's is deeply entwined with carnival culture. So Rex does its enormous luncheon there on Wednesday. Hermes is there on Friday before its parade that night. I think it's Proteus on Monday. Each of these luncheons seats like 1,000 people, and there's overflow to other restaurants from people affiliated with those crews, spouses and other people, if there's not enough room for every single person in the restaurant. And so that Friday in particular, you know, with Hermes taking over Antoine's and all the spillover and just the festive scene, it kind of set the stage. And a lot of other old line restaurants have riffed on that. I mean, Galatoire's at this point, for many years, has auctioned off the tables in its dining room for that Friday before Mardi Gras, to the highest bidder because the demand to get in is so high. They just decided to turn the craze into a charity. They give all the money, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to charities for it. But so what you're seeing is other restaurants that are not so deeply part of the custom and tradition, picking it up for everyday folks, right? Like, you're not getting into Antoine's on the Friday before Mardi Gras unless you happen to somehow, pierce the societal veil of the crew of Hermes. It's the Friday Gras tradition for everyone else. And so in the quarter, you see people just dolled up. Some people, guys in suits, but lots of people in costumes and glitter and flair. And so much more modern restaurants, newer restaurants, restaurants in different parts of town have embraced that too. And so I would say, if that sounds like fun to you, and it was fun for me going out and about that Friday, it really was, probably now is not a bad time to start planning for the earlier Mardi Gras coming up. And I'm serious, because that's how far out some of these things are planned. And so the Quench Quarter really comes to life with all these private parties and with people kind of doing it up on their own terms, you know, with that realization that you can have your own private party with a festive six-top or an eight-top or a four-top or a two-top if the two of you are crazy enough at these restaurants, just if you bring the right spirit. And on the Friday before Mardi Gras, whatever we're calling it, it's easy to get into that spirit. So, yeah, it was a blast.
Yeah, the auction last year at Galatoire's, I see your article there, brought in $284,000, eight top or table for eight, going for $22,000. And I saw, as I was going home last week, a lot of young ladies dressed with the, I guess, smaller hats on their heads or whatever it is, making it a fashion occasion. But this is not just the French Quarter. And it's interesting that I should ask you about this. I didn't know you had written an article about it. But it does seem as though this is getting bigger and bigger each year, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the tradition is the tradition. Those things are set like into perpetuity, I think, as long as New Orleans can keep the water at bay, people are going to be going to their traditional tables at Antoine's, Nip Brennan's and such, forever. So, but it's interesting for people who hear this and think, that sounds like a good time. I'm not working on Friday before Mardi Gras. I'm going to do it up, spackle on some glitter and, button up the bustier and then go join the party, is these other newer restaurants that are setting the stage for it. And I think that's really fun. I think it expands, broadens, and kind of makes the tradition a little more egalitarian. And that reflects Mardi Gras in general, because, it's no longer just the old line crews that you have to sort of, you know, have a bloodline or the right marriage connection to get into, you know, with newer crews, more marching groups, dance troops, all the other you know, auxiliary elements that join the Mardi Gras processions. And then, you know, those people have their own clubs and crews and societies, and it's a different vibe on the same theme that is Carnival in New Orleans, and that's why it's so increasingly beautiful, I think, of Mardi Gras, because there's so many more access points. And of course, our restaurants and our bars are the stage for a lot of that. Just like the streets are the stage for the parades, the restaurants and bars are sort of the galleries for the pre-parties and such.
Get a couple of different texts here. My friends and I have been lunching in the French Quarter Friday before Mardi Gras for like 7 years. Best day. So much fun. Very local. Everybody dresses up. And I don't think they mean in costume. I think they mean dresses up like haute couture. How do you say that word?
Yeah, putting on the Ritz. I think it's both, though, Tommy. And that's Mardi Gras, isn't it? It's the traditional and the absurd. It's the, you know, the formal and the spectacular next to each other. And that's one thing I love about Mardi Gras. You know, it doesn't happen without the framework that the old line traditional crews set up and maintain. And it just wouldn't be as much fun if it wasn't for the impromptu sort of street theater of people just dressing up to entertain and be delightful to each other and have a great time in our city the way we do it. You know, I heard a great analogy recently that, you know, the Super Bowl was a party that we threw for other people and we really, you know, weren't invited to it, whereas Mardi Gras is the party we always throw for ourselves, and that's what it felt like throughout the streets. And I'm a big fan of what New Orleans did for Super Bowl this year, by the way. But as far as just making it your own and joining the party, Mardi Gras is just as easy as joining in the spirit and getting out there. And again, hats off to our restaurants and bars who, when everyone else is in party mode, they're partying a bit too, but they're working really hard and they're opening up those hospitality spaces that give so much character and framework for it all.
For Super Bowl, we kind of Airbnb the city out is what we do.
It was like this giant bubble of people with all the money in the world kind of descended like Glinda the Witch of the East in a bubble and landed in New Orleans with all their toys and their yachts and their helicopters and then took off to do that wherever they do that next for the next big thing. But
real quick, I know they got some other stuff you want to talk about. We could take a break. But before we do, I wanted to ask you about with Friday Gras, and I know you got Commander's Palace, I think, mentioned in your story. Is this spreading to other restaurants outside of the quarter? And secondly, when it comes to Mardi Gras, do upper-end restaurants really experience is it a good time of year for them or not?
Okay, I'll take those in reverse order. Yeah, right. It's a great time. It throws off the rhythms, of course. If you're in the box, if you're out of the box, those are all giant considerations for it. But generally, I mean, the town's packed with people, and lunches are really big before the nighttime parades. It's private parties. It's a lot of bookings. It's a carnival of cashing in for sure. Not universal, you know. Just depends where you are, of course. Much like the Super Bowl experience. But to the first part of that, a big point of it is it is expanding from the French Quarter. You know, Ralph's in the Park, Mid-City has a huge day with it. Commanders, you mentioned, I mean, I'm seeing places in the Warehouse District, and I predict it'll spread more and more. Like Le Petit Grocery, for instance, their sister restaurant, Justine, in the French Quarter, completely booked with a private party every year for that Friday Gras, whereas Le Petit Grocery up on Magazine Street, just a block off the route in the box, is more like people who just want to go out and have their own festive lunch with that four top or six top I talked about and kind of, you know, do, you know, a crew of one's own, you know, and that's, again, that's the spirit of Mardi Gras. You just make it your own, you know, come in with the right attitude, maybe a little flair, do it up, order a couple more bottles of wine than you usually would at lunch, and don't go back to the office. Don't
all about anything. The attitude. And I also know it seemed like some local people staying at hotels with this Friday Gras. I know they got other stuff to talk about. We'll get to it when we come back talking to Ian McNulty, eating and drinking. Y'all got any questions? 504-260-1870. Somebody corrected me. I said March 19th. That seemed kind of late. March 9th is the latest that Mardi Gras can possibly be. Thank you for that. I think next year it's February 17th, so it's going to be a shorter period. More with Ian McNulty when we return here on WWL. 927, back with Ian McNulty, talking, eating, and drinking. We've already looked back and covered Friday Gras. What happens now, Ian, in the restaurant industry? What's got your attention?
Oh, well, I've got two very different restaurants for you that I wrote up this week they've been on my mind for a while, and I wanted to wait until Mardi Gras haze cleared to kind of put them on people's radar, but they definitely should be. These places on paper couldn't be more different, but they're both excellent. One of them is in Metairie. It's called Dr. Jones. And Tommy, this is what happens when two chefs leave the fine dining world and decide to basically open a diner and start out with a pretty basic menu, but just start doing their chefly things. And before you know it, they've got a really different, interesting spot on their hands. Dr. Jones is on Vets. It was once Yakuza House. People with long memories will know it was Giovanni's Po' Boys back in the day. It's by Majoria Drugs. It's a tiny, tiny little storefront, just open for lunch, dinner one night a week, Saturday. It's a BYOB kind of place. And this sounds like BYOB. You just described it as a diner. Yeah, but it's a bit of both. It's a bit of a diner. It's a bit of fine dining. It's easy. It's affordable. It's fun. It's a couple chefs who came out of the Donald Link restaurant group, Herb Saint and Koshan, respectively. They each ran the kitchens there for a time. And it's dishes that taste like New Orleans cooking, but not like you're making at home. Not your standard at all. A little bit of Vietnamese in there, because that's very New Orleans now. And a gumbo. I'll just describe the gumbo, okay? It's a chicken andouille gumbo. But to make it, they're roasting the tomatoes and the okra overnight. So that adds umami. There's dried scallops and shrimp in the gumbo that you cannot see. And I tell you, I could not distinctively taste it. It wasn't like this is scallop gumbo. Mm-hmm. But that dried shellfish just explodes with umami once it hits the roux. And there's even these Haitian black mushrooms called John John that, again, you're not eating this thinking, oh, that's a Haitian black mushroom. This is a mushroom gumbo. It's a chicken andouille gumbo that just has a roux that pulses with flavor because of all the little chefly tricks they put into it long before you ordered it. And that kind of sets the stage for the whole menu. Tiny place, 20 seats, a little diner counter with an open kitchen, two chefs and a cook and maybe one waiter working the place. Dr. Jones. Check out photos on my Instagram, at Ian McNulty NOLA, and the stories on NOLA.com.
And where is the restaurant, Ian?
Veterans, I want to say 1325 off the top of my head, but
addresses mean nothing. What's it next to?
Right. It's next to Majoria Drugs.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, between Martin's and Dorniak's, if you're stopping for BYOB. Now, the other place, I know we're going to be quick here, the other place is Deep Uptown. So we're going from Vets in Metairie to Deep Uptown. Mm-hmm. Gautreaux's restaurant, right? It's been there forever.
Right.
Beloved place, uptown institution, kind of on a footing with Clancy's, that kind of thing. Right next door to it, the Gautreaux's people opened a new lounge. It's called Avigno, or is it Avegno, like our city health director? It's properly pronounced Avigno or close to that, but I have a feeling, will it survive New Orleans pronunciation? Like much like Mosca's, Damascus, I'm putting my money on New Orleans pronunciation. But anyway, Avigno is a gorgeous little jewel box of a lounge that feels like you're stepping off of Sonnet Street and into a little piece of Paris. It's a sister to Gautreaux's, but it's very different approach to the wine list, to the menu. It's a bar. It's essentially a wine bar with a really nice menu. And again, check out pictures again on my Instagram, Ian McNulty NOLA, and the full write up on NOLA.com. But it is this little piece of elegance that is it's there for you if you're heading out to a special at night on the town. You want to start with a touch of class, or you're all dolled up and you don't want the night to end, or you're having dinner at Gautreaux's and you decide you want a pre dinner drink, a post dinner drink, or maybe both. You know, the one block date night with its own encore, that's a possibility. But you come in there, you're going to find a wine list with a lot of glass, a lot of wines by the glass, a lot of half bottles, which is really nice touch for those kind of pre and post dinner visits when you don't want a full bottle. And food like French onion soup, fine French ham, very similar to jamon or prosciutto, oysters, fondue, cheese boards. You can make a meal of it. You can have a couple snacks. Boudin noir, the blood sausage, the black boudin. Fabulous. So a really interesting menu that you could build a dinner around for sure, but it's also there to stop in, have a glass of wine, a cocktail, and a snack. And again, it's called Avenue. It's right next door to Gautreaux's and is the sister concept from the same owners.
Would it be analogous to like, and I'm not trying to compare or anything, but just like a Delachaise kind of thing? Because what I'm thinking, Ian, is a lot of people, you know, maybe with weight loss, drugs, whatever, are eating less. And if you're looking for something lighter and a nice drink or a nice glass of wine, seems like it'd be the perfect place for that.
Delachaise is always a good call. I'm calling
no,
it
I'm much, talking about more, your place. I'm talking about Avenue.
Yes, yeah, no, but Avenue is more analogous to Lillette with Bologna Tavern right next door. So think about that comp. Like Lillette is the full-on bistro. Bologna Tavern is, I would say, more about cocktails than wine, but, you know, a lounge menu, a lounge feel, a big bar. Avenue is sort of like more like the wine bar sister to Gautreaux's in that respect, and they're right next door to each other. I mean, it's like boom, boom, right there. Yeah, and you can have a lighter meal there. I mean, I the food is would not call any of the food light necessarily, beyond the oysters. But it's but if you're having fewer courses, if you're not sitting down to a textbook size slab of lasagna, of which I am a fan. These are smaller dishes and things you might share rather than having your traditional, you know, three-course meal with leftovers boxed up for later.
Somebody texted in a question, simply patois.
Yeah, patois. Hey, we're talking about the New Orleans patois of Avenue Avignon. Patois is fantastic. Maybe the cue for that was mentioning Clancy's, because patois is sort of like the more modern bistro just up the street from Clancy's. Again, another very deep uptown kind of find, not along a major avenue or street. You got to know it's back there. It's by City Park. It's on Webster Street, I want to say. But Aaron Burgau opened that. It was part of the class of restaurants that emerged right after Hurricane Katrina, you know, when New Orleans was starting to get its groove back in, I want to say, 2008 or so. And it's been rolling ever since. It still feels like a very modern restaurant. It has some kind of greatest hits that are always on the menu. The fish almondine there is just first class, and it's fantastic. But it's really more about some of the more creative dishes coming out of the kitchen around it. And whenever I drive by there, I'm just thinking about those lamb ribs that they often do. Great, nice cocktails too. And it's one of those upscale neighborhood spots, right? I have friends who live nearby, and that's their like kind of pop in on a Thursday night kind of a place. But it's definitely worthy for a reservation date night destination.
Ian McNulty, a pleasure as always. Sorry, you got to do is Google Ian McNulty or search it on whatever search engine. You can find everything you need to know about eating and drinking. A pleasure as always. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Thanks, Tommy. I missed you last week. Bye.
Me too. Happy eating, happy drinking. But I know you had a good time wherever you were. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to JR from Taking Vegas. See what's going on with March Madness and more when we return. Tommy Tucker, WWL. Let's look at traffic. 41:19 till 10. Time to talk to JR from Taking Vegas. JR, last week, first of all, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Happy Basketball Friday. How are you?
Happy Friday to you. I'm so anxious to get to you. Last week, you gave us Purdue-UCLA free pick on air. You said it wasn't sexy. You know what? It was sexy because it hit, and it was awesome. Previous week, I forgot what the pick was. It was free. It hit. You're on fire with your on-air picks. Nobody's 100%. What was it, Tim? Yeah, and anyway, let's talk about you.
That was the one where you said you were walking by the casino and you were like, you know what? I remember JR gave me this.
Exactly. I forgot what it was because I write them down and I make the bets and all I do is collect the tickets and I don't care who's playing who. I don't. None of that matters, and that goes to the nature of what you do. You can't bet with your heart. You can't bet with your head. You can't really care about who's playing. All you have to do is go by the numbers and the analysis, right?
You have to. And, you know, we got a word for that here. And it really does. Like, there's one particular team this year that stung us multiple times. But we don't care. The information is what it is. And when it spits out what it spits out, we're going to run with it, period, right? So you know, we have a saying here. We're soulless. When it comes to the games, if you're not soulless, like emotionless, you're going to get eaten up, spit out, chewed up 1,000 times over again. So,
even
yeah, when
if
you
it
do
means
it,
betting against the team that you want emotionally to win, because it's not about that. It's about what the numbers show.
Correct. Yeah, you can't, like, if during football season, we know that the majority of people in the New Orleans area are all betting the Saints. And that worked for you the first 2 weeks of the year. Thereafter, you got smashed. You got put into a meat grinder. You don't want to be doing that, okay? You really got to look at this. Take a step back. Allow the numbers to speak to you. And what I mean by that is do some homework, okay? If you're going to do it on your own, you got to dig in. You got to look at things that make sense. And I'm not just talking about line movements, and I'm not just talking about matchups, but you got to look at height differentials. You got to look at speed differentials. There's so much that you got to look at that if you're not, you know, truly tuned in, then it is hard to win, man. There's a reason 90% of people lose on their own betting. And there's a lot of guys that actually have a winning record but still lose money because their management is terrible. So let's start this off right, okay? 2 weeks in a row, I told you to text in for the NBA game of the week, and 2 weeks in a row, they were complete and utter blowout winners. Last week gave you another huge blowout with Denver. The week before was a huge blowout, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who beat up on the New York Knicks. We're doing it again today. So get my NBA game of the week right now. It is absolutely free. There's no strings attached, and you can get it via text message. Text the word WIN to the number 545454. Let me give you the NBA game of the week for free. That's the most exciting game on the board tonight. And guys, we've got obviously a lot of the smaller conferences have started, like the Horizon League with their conference tournament. But midweek, we've got SEC. We've got Big 12. We've got a lot happening this upcoming week. And it's the lead up, of course, into Selection Sunday, which I'm going to be in Vegas for the first and second round, as I am every year. I'm already booked first class, ready to go. So I want to make you guys a nice big score during the conference tournaments for the lead up into the big dance. So do yourself a favor. Let me give you a big blowout yet again tonight, my NBA game of the week, absolutely free. You get it via text message. Text the word WIN to the number 545454. Let me get you set up.
Tell me about managing your budget and your money and your bankroll, because you don't want to go crazy all with the conference conference championships, right?
Sure. Right. Well, and this is one of the reasons why I think it's so important to have somebody with some experience and who has done this 1,000 times and understands how to win at a high level. Right. That's dealing with an expert, somebody like myself who's been in this and you know, has really looked at every angle for over 30 years in the industry. So what I'm going to say, percentages count. So when it comes to your bankroll, you know, don't just jump out there and be betting 20 or 30% of the money that you have already saved up to get you through the next 30 days of what's going to be very chaotic and fun, and put it into one game. So take a chunk of whatever it is that you're working with. Let's just say your bankroll, for argument's sake, is $3,000 or $5,000 to keep the number simple. Don't use more than 20% on all of the conference tournaments combined. Don't go playing $500 a game, 10% of your bankroll, because it sounds good. You want to take $1,000 of that $5,000 and dedicate it to just, you know, the first, let's say, 2 days of the conference tournaments. And you could change your unit day by day. But when you're running into it, don't go in for more than a certain percentage of your overall bankroll. Now, when you get into the dance, we do break it down by day, percentage of bankroll by day. And I try to raise the unit each day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, again, if you have no experience in strategy and you have an idea of how to win, and you know, or if you're a guy that, you know, is great with strategy but can't win, you might have one, you might not have the other. Let me help you. I mean, this is where we excel. This is where we're going to make the biggest score of the year for our clientele, and I want to show you how to do it right. And that's one of the reasons why we give out the free play. I know my reputation is on the line every time I give out a free play. So we want to make sure not only that we win, but I want to get you hooked in, because quite frankly, guys, once you're doing, you know, at a high level with a real company that understands all this from every angle, you're never going to want to not only pick games on your own, but you're sure not going to want to figure out strategy. 20. So text the word win right now to 545454. I'll start you off with a blowout tonight in the NBA for free, no strings attached. And after you get in with us, maybe you want to sign up and get involved for something very small. I mean, you can get in with us right now for $99 just to test the waters, and then it, you know, takes off from there. So again, text win to 545454.
What you're talking about is in a way, multiples, mathematical progressions. It's all about the math, and that's what you do. And you started on Wall Street. I know people sometimes take umbrage at this, but really what you're doing is that not that much difference than speculating on stocks or anything, is it?
No, in fact, I've done, like you just said, I was a money manager. I was a fiduciary for many years. I owned a brokerage back in the late 90s, and I loved it. It wasn't something I disliked. It was just I enjoyed the sports a lot more, and I was making much more money still doing my side gig with the sports on the weekends with far less regulation at the time. Now, of course, it's legal everywhere, but, I mean, we were just taking advantage of point spreads all over the country. You had different books all over the place, and, you know, it was so much easier than it is today. Now, don't get me wrong. It's easier to move more money today, right? There is way, way more money on the table, you know, these days than there was even just 10 years ago. And it's a lot easier to get it done, to get money in, but now you got to spread it out because there's so much, there's not as much competition in the sportsbook arena today that there was when it was spread out with Uncle Vinny's all over the country and with, you know, people betting overseas and a thousand ways different, you know, to be able to get their money. And now it's just these 5 to 10 different sportsbooks. Some states only, like Florida, there's only one book in Florida. They have exclusivity for 30 years. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. So the books get to dictate not only the point spreads, but also what they're going to take, okay? So they can start limiting the people that are winning. And that's why this is the forever chase for a guy like me trying to continuously find new players to get involved to make more money, you know, before they're limited and I got to find somebody else and find someone else and find someone else. At the same time, liquidity is jumping through the roof because there's more people betting. So therefore, there's more money to be made. It's crazy.
Quick word, if you will, about betting your hunches and parlays?
Well, I mean, that's what the books want you to do. You never want to do what the books want you to do. They're your competition. There's a reason they advertise, you know, like that guy, we talked about this one before, with his head in the popcorn bowl, Buffalo, you know, bet your hunch. That's stupidity. I mean, if you're not looking at the, I mean, don't get me wrong, listen, if you're going to bet $5 on a 16 parlay, have at it.
You that's not real
money.
The
same thing as going and buying a scratch-off ticket. You're playing lotto. You know, you're hoping for the best. So, you know, if that's what you're doing and you don't mind throwing away a couple of bucks entertaining yourself, have at it. But if you're saying to yourself, man, I would love to make some money doing this, and I'm not sitting here saying we're guaranteeing anything. Just historically speaking, we have hit at a ridiculous pace, okay? Just college basketball right now, this season, my clients, if you've been with me from the beginning of college basketball to now, that we're talking top-level plays, okay? Guys that are betting the games I'm giving out. Over 72% is hit. Now, the company as a whole, through the free plays and what goes out to the masses, still documented over 62% right now for the year. Those that don't understand those numbers, those are astronomical. Those are real numbers. I mean, we're talking about money that can be made like you've never seen. I've got 4 new players with me this year, brand new players that have made over $1 million with me. Now, granted, and they didn't start off with $100,000 in their account. These were guys that had $5,000 or $10,000 in their bankroll to start, but were willing to use a pretty aggressive progression that we put together for them. And I mean, here we are, you know, 6 months later, counting the money and meeting in Vegas in a week.
I got to get a sofa for the lake house, JR. What's your pick for my on-air pick this week?
I like it. So, all right, you got Purdue taking on Illinois. Purdue has not been good on the road their last 3 games, scoring, I believe, an average of close to only 65 points. Illinois is just, they're a stronger team. They're getting healthy. They're playing well. They're at home. And they've got the height difference. I mean, they got everything going for them. They're only minus 4.5 points. The line opened 3.5. A lot of the bigger money came in early on Illinois. I believe the public will be on Purdue in this game just for the simple fact that they're 2 games better and, you know, obviously a ranked team. So I think that the public will be on the wrong side of an underdog here, and there's a reason the line is going up with the bigger money coming in on the favorite. Get in Illinois minus the 4.5. That should be an easy one. But look, guys, if you really want to make some money, get my strongest plays. Okay, I'm giving you the NBA game of the week, 2 blowouts in a row now if you contacted us, and you don't even have to call. All you got to do, text the word WIN to 545454, and we're going to hit you right back and give you the winner. Again, a huge blowout in the NBA happening tonight. My NBA game of the week, absolutely free. No purchase, no credit card, none of that, guys. No strings attached. Text the word WIN to 545454, and we'll hit you right back with that blowout winner. So let's be safe. Let's have fun. Let's make money during the conference tournaments. And more than anything, guys, let's go out there and let's make some money.
Illinois minus 4.5. Thank you, JR. Have a great weekend. We'll listen for you tomorrow morning at 7 on WWL.